hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ain't ought to be.
Just walk on by.
Running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, walking on the fight beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe the fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog of doubt. If you don't love it, leave it. Singing, be it warned. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You run down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. So much has happened, of course. We continue to deal with the aftermath of the shooting of the 50 people at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, just about a little over a week ago. And the reaction, particularly in the West, and I have to say, I don't challenge in the sense of I don't believe it can happen, but I have worries about whether the white race can survive or has the will to survive, at least in New Zealand. Now, of course, I have been to New Zealand, but I don't know it all that well. And of course, you have to be cautious about what you read in the lamestream media. But almost immediately, the woman I call Jug Ears, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, has announced, apparently with the support of the opposition party, that the banning of assault rifles, large magazines, some devices that can convert a semi-automatic to automatic, and so on. None of which, of course, will do the slightest bit to stop violence. If people intend to commit mass murder, they will find a way. For instance, just because the guns will be banned doesn't mean they may not be obtainable. Right now, handguns are very much restricted in Canada. You can legally own one, but it takes a lot of application. You can't legally carry it except for a gun range, unless you're a police officer or a very, very small limited number of other people. That doesn't mean that anybody with connections in a sleazy bar can't get a handgun. All bans or severe prohibitions do is deter law-abiding people from getting them. more bad news from New Zealand. You wonder, do you as a people have the fortitude to live? You're being invaded, and all you can do is whip yourselves. I mean, I saw pictures, and of course, they may be just a very limited number of people going out to mosques. I'm talking about white people, kids in school uniforms, helping and so on, solidarity. Now, I can appreciate people mourning the dead. No problem with that. But this outpouring of involvement by white people, let the Muslims quietly bury their dead. Facebook, this is from today's Global Mail. Facebook removed 1.2 million attempts to upload copies of the videos in the first 24 hours after the attack. Yes, the shooter, I think, had one of those head cams and had about a 17-minute video of some of the shooting, which he uploaded rather cleverly to the social media, to a platform that doesn't immediately slap you down. So Facebook removed 1.2 million attempts to upload copies of the video in the first 24 hours after the attack, though another 300,000 copies made it through. YouTube suspended a function that let users search for the most recently uploaded videos because copies of the attacks were going up faster than the site could take them down. Both companies said they face challenges from users who re-edited the video to make it harder for their automatic software to detect. And I just write here, ha ha, good. You know, I wouldn't show a video of the shooting to an impressionable young person. And although I was certainly given a direction as to where to find it, I didn't look at it myself. I wouldn't say I'm not interested, but I'm not very interested. But this mania to censor, and luckily, technically clever people are able to keep one step ahead of the artificial intelligences and the robots that are trying to scour the social media and suppress things. Imagine 1.2 million attempts were stopped. Why not let those who are interested see the video? We are in a war with censors. There's more information about the technicalities here. Now, this is what really gets me a bit disturbed. We have today, in the open internet, where everyone can see and view messages, said Ahmed Al-Rawi, assistant professor of social media, news and public communications at Simon Fraser University. But my concern will be with what is concealed from us. Such fears have prompted renewed calls for regulation in New Zealand. Internet service providers penned an open letter to social media giants calling on them to support laws such as the one passed in Germany last year, threatening online companies with fines of as much as £50 million, which would be about $75 million, a day if they didn't remove hate speech and other illegal content within 24 hours. Now that is the tyrannical regime in place in Germany. We used to think in the days of communism that what was then West Germany was part of the free world. Well, it ain't. Not very free. Now listen to what
ISPs in New Zealand, internet service providers, are asking the big boys like the to do. They're asking in an open letter the social media giants to support laws like the ones one in Germany, threatening online companies with fines of as much as $75 million a day if they don't remove hate speech and other illegal content within 24 hours of being notified. Now, of course, that's an open door for outright censorship. What's hate speech? Well, hate speech is a speech I hate. Would there be an objective standard? Would there have to have been a conviction in jurisdictions where we're backward enough where there were some types of speech are banned? Who knows? The mere saying it would be enough. This is frightening. As I say, I don't personally have enough of a feel for New Zealand to say whether such just whip pussy behavior is widespread. But the very fact that even, you know, you think outfits who have some inclination to freedom, you would think that they themselves would be up in arms. Apparently not so. Oh, yes, from what is now my hometown, Hamilton. Front page in this slandering piece of kitty litter box lining, the Hamilton Spectator front page. And it really defamed me earlier in the year. And earlier this week, and I talked about that yesterday. Here's a picture. We stand as one. Laura Wolfson. I don't think that lady's from County Tipperary. Anyway, Laura Wolfson holds up a placard. It says, "Standing in solidarity with our Muslim friends," and a crudely drawn new Canadian flag. Laura Wolfson holds up a placard at the Hamilton Downtown Mosque. Hamiltonians came together at mosques across the city through the Friday prayers, forming circles of solidarity in the wake of the rampage in Christchurch, New Zealand. The solidarity circles are formed to bring, quote, an end to hate, Islamophobia, and white supremacy, as well as short support for the Muslim community. This picture really does not show a lot of people. It's hard to tell whether it's just a handful or a dozen or so. Looking at the faces, I see white people, but probably that's the only ones I'll see. At the best, you can say they're well-meaning, but they're certainly foolish. And I wonder if they had a similar manifestation when 81 of my blood ancestors were run over by a rampaging truck driven by a Moroccan terrorist along the promenade, the seaside promenade on July 14th, 3 years ago. That was Bastille Day. It mowed down and killed 81 Frenchmen. This was an act of terror. Nearly twice as powerful in its number of victims as the attack at Christchurch. And I recall, frankly, I don't recall any expressions of solidarity or grieving at a church. I don't remember the Muslim community coming out to show solidarity with fallen Frenchmen. It's all one-sided. Stupid, gullible white people feeling guilty. Oh, and what are they united against? Okay, they want to end hate, Islamophobia, and white supremacy. I wonder what type of hate they want to end. The sort of hate that you might see in some passages in the Talmud. No, that's not a Muslim holy book. It's a Jewish holy book. And they have some explaining to do. What about the hatred demonstrated by some factions of Islam that have regularly attacked Christian churches with huge loss of life in Pakistan and in Egypt. There's an ancient Christian sect of the Copts, the Coptic Christians in Egypt. They're repeatedly attacked and murdered. I don't recall Muslim groups standing in solidarity here. So when we talk about hate, it's only really basically they're talking about white pride. Islamophobia. Well, what's Islamophobia? I'm not afraid of Muslims. I just don't want large numbers of the supporters of this backward religion in Canada. I don't mean to say that the first Muslim on the block is going to destroy the neighborhood. I don't mean that at all. And I don't doubt many Muslims are peaceful. But many are not. And their religion is a religion historically of conquest. And when that is what the religion states, that there will be the Dar es Salaam, or the peace on earth, or the peace of God, only when all knees are bent to Allah. And they haven't always tried to make people bend their knees through persuasion, through intellectual persuasion. Now, again, not all Muslims behave like that, just like not all Christians follow Christian principles. And, you know, I'm sure there are many backsliding Muslims, as there are a lot of backsliding Christians. But, you know, if you take a religion at its face value, at what it states, they've got some explaining to do. How will they live peacefully in large numbers in another society? Well, frankly, why should we have to find out? Oh, yeah, so what else do they... Oh, yeah, they want to end white supremacy. Where is white supremacy? We're white, but by gosh, we're not in control of our own country. And in very few countries. Donald Trump, I think, is struggling to do a good job in the United States. People like President Viktor Orban in Hungary, certainly, the president of Poland, and certain other areas. But France is being betrayed from the very top. Germany's being betrayed from the very top. And although the conservatives are in England, they're being betrayed by the very top, and to say nothing of Canada. And I know there are people in our society that don't like that word, traitor. And I try not to toss it around promiscuously, you know, everybody's a traitor. No, there are many people who support or go along with the planned replacement of the European people of Western Europe and of Canada and the United States. They go along perhaps out of ignorance. Perhaps it's not their major issue and they don't think much about it. I don't mean to suggest that everybody who supports passively or actively our replacement is a villain, is evil at heart. But objectively, when the person is a leader, and I talk here of the leaders, a prime minister, for instance, that person, I think, can and should be held accountable. You know, he's the leader of the country. You know, he's not even a minor politician. He is the leader of the country. There is an obligation to protect the country. There's an argument among those of us who are libertarians and those who are more interventionist about the true role of government. But on this, everybody is agreed. The anarcho-libertarians and people like myself who perhaps a little more in the middle of the road, although maybe a little more on the libertarian side, and those who see a big role for government. But everyone is agreed that one of the key functions of government is to maintain law and order. That's one of the things you have a government for. Maintain law and order and to protect your country's borders. No borders, no country. If anybody can walk in, you don't have a country. So the protection of a country's borders, see, or more
broadly national defense. Now, that is a proper role of government, national defense. We expect government to organize that. We don't have feel we all should have to pick up our rifles, if we still have one, or a pitchfork, or a sword, or something, and march to the border to defend it. We will if we have to, but that's a role primarily that we give to government to organize that and to protect the border, which is why we traditionally have an army and border patrol and institutions like that. In a country like Canada, where our trust fund kid prime minister has allowed tens of thousands of illegals to pour across the border, some in southern Manitoba, but more particularly Roxham Road in the province of Quebec. Now, this has been going on for over 2 years. If it went on for a couple of days, you might cut the guy some slack. They have to have a committee and another committee to meet and a subcommittee to study and so on. But okay, 2 years in, if you haven't done something, it's on you. Why haven't you done it? And I made this point in a speech last Saturday in Vancouver. It was part of a much larger talk, which I see the anti-racists have picked up and are much vexed at. Of course, they carefully put up clips that don't give the true flavor of the speech. But I said then, and I repeated again, this is not a task beyond even the government of a small country. And we're not a small country. We have an armed forces of over 60,000 people. We have provincial and municipal police forces. So there's a small stretch of border that doesn't have a fence on it. It seems very convenient because of the way the roads converge. So they drive up through, I believe it's up in New York State, to the Roxham Road, and they simply cross a small ditch. And they've been doing that over 40,000 strong for almost 2 years now. Why has it not been stopped? There is a bureaucratic technical reason. Well, it's true. There's a treaty with Canada, the United States, which is called the Third Safe Country Treaty, which requires a would-be applicant for refugee status to apply in the first country that person comes to. It would be a Canada or the United States. That makes a lot of sense. It prevents refugee shopping. So supposing you arrive in the United States, you are obligated to make your refugee application there, not slither up to Canada. And conversely, if you come to Canada and you wish to make a refugee application, you must make your application here, not try to sneak down into the United States. It makes a lot of sense. So you say, well, what's the problem? You've got these people coming up from the United States, and they're not Americans, incidentally, and walking across the little ditch into Quebec. Why don't you stop them? Well, very good question. Well, it's a technicality. The law, the treaty says, at a designated border crossing, which means, I guess, where there's a customs and immigration officials, that's a designated border crossing. Like Windsor, Ontario, or Niagara Falls, or Port Fourier, Ontario, etc. But the idea being, if you walk 100 yards down the border and cross through the field, it's not a designated crossing, so okay, we have to accept you. Well, then, that's insane. And any reasonable person would see it's insane. That was not the spirit of the treaty. The Conservative opposition has on numerous occasions said, well, designate the whole border as a designated border crossing. Yeah, so if the wording isn't quite right, make it right. That is, if you're sincere. But they haven't done that. The other alternative would be to prevent them from getting across. And this is what I said last Saturday. Duh, well, a build a fence. And if they're sufficiently limber to clamber over the fence, build a wall. And I then said facetiously, and the ARC, of course, cut this part off. I said, or if necessary, mine the border. Again, then added, of course, that wouldn't be my first choice. I wouldn't want to see
the Odd Rabbit blowing up.
But, I mean, you get the picture. Come on. If you can't protect a small crossing, you may as well hand in the keys of government and disband the armed forces. They are beyond useless. No, it's not that they can't. It's that they won't. There is no will. And it's not even lethargy. Lethargy would be bad enough. You'd say, get off your collective bums and do it. No, it's worse than that. It's worse than that. It's not lethargy. It's treason. And I use that word pointedly and deliberately. It is treason. The Trudeau government is signally failing its obligation to protect the border. They will have a long-winded explanation we have to accept them to allow them to make a refugee claim under the law. Well, then change the law or prevent them from getting in. It's wrong. These people will be on welfare forever as they get processed. And the process costs a fortune, probably $50,000 per illegal. And then they have to be supported on welfare and Medicare and housed and so on. Yes, eventually a few will get jobs. At immense cost to the Canadian taxpayer. It's wrong. Why do they do it? Because the Liberal government, certainly Trudeau, at base, doesn't like us. He's part of the agenda to replace the European founding settler people. That he's big on that. In fact, he rants and raves against nationalism and racism and xenophobia wherever he can. He says Canada's the first post-national state. We don't have a political culture. Well, maybe he has no culture. But we do. So he doesn't see us as a European country. He sees us as basically being up for grabs. And worse than that, he's constantly apologizing for the history of a people he hates. And that's us. That is why, very deliberately, I use the word traitor. Not as an unfocused comment, but deliberately. Oh yeah, here's an item. Whoa! Greatest immigrant population growth. Immigrant influx biggest since First World War. Hooray for us! Canada just recorded its biggest influx of immigrants in more than a century. The country added 71,131 immigrants in the final 3 months of 2018 for a full year increase of 321,065, according to the latest estimates released by Statistics Canada. The annual increase is the largest since 1913, when 401,000 immigrants flocked to the country, and the fourth largest in historical data going back to 1852. Now, there was a particular reason in 1913 for the huge number. The government of the day, quite rightly at the time, was trying to populate the Canadian prairies with farmers on the basis of we either begin to use that land or it becomes an incredible temptation to the United States to move up and seize. You know, you either occupied with some warm bodies or you may not have it for much longer. So this fantastic achievement, the biggest number in over 100 years, for what? We have considerable unemployment now. What are these people going to do? Well, some will get jobs, but they're going to take jobs from Canadians. Some will not get jobs, and because we're a compassionate country, we have to take care of them. Former reform member of parliament and an economist and professor emeritus at Simon Fraser University, Professor Herb Grubel, has done studies with Patrick Brady, a colleague of his, and the current estimate is that the immigration cohort that we got from about 1985 on to the present is costing us today about $40 billion a year. and he calculates that on the basis of tax money these people pay at all levels, income tax, sales tax, or property taxes perhaps, balanced against what they take out. So what do they put into the tax pot? What do they take out? There's a $40 billion a year deficit. Immigration grows the economy? No. Immigration drains the taxpayer. But we got the most number of immigrants in over 100 years this year. I mean, last year. Oh, yay, wow, hooray for us. No, this is a disaster. Of course, it's not presented that way in the lamestream media. There's a story, goes back a couple of weeks, of somebody, I guess, in an apartment across from another high-rise, caught a blonde, good-looking female throwing what looked like a lawn chair off the balcony window, or I mean off the balcony of that of a particular apartment, and it tumbled to the ground very close to a highway. Didn't hit anybody, and it didn't do any damage. Anyway, there was much kerfuffle over the social media about this, and much comment and how irresponsible and terrible. And yeah, I agree. It was a dumb thing to do. Well, finally, the woman was quite attractive, so it wasn't, I guess, too difficult to eventually track her down. So she was identified. She was charged. Well, I read today in the Toronto Sun that that woman has been kicked out her institution of education. She's trained to be a dental assistant. I think that this is part of the insanity of the times we live in. The punishment of being kicked out of the college for dental hygiene has no connection to her foolish action, perhaps even criminal action, at that apartment. We don't know the circumstances. There hasn't been a trial. I mean, is there I won't say an excuse, but was she perhaps drunk? Was it perhaps an accident? We don't know the circumstances. But even if it were exactly what it seemed, very irresponsibly and foolishly, she tossed this light metal lawn chair over the balcony, and it fell very close to a road. Yeah, that was wrong. It was irresponsible, perhaps even criminal. I'm not sure. Well, then punish her for that. You know, a fine, or I can't imagine putting her in jail, but okay, a fine. You know, she gets reprimanded for a foolish action. Fair enough. But why must the penalty be to try to nuke her, to try to ruin her life? And I see that. I see that particularly with people having the wrong opinions in Canada today. It's not enough to criticize you or denounce you, or if it's possible, the Puritans of political correctness want to ruin you. Not admonish you or whatever, but to ruin you. And I don't know this woman from a hole in the ground, and I know nothing about her. But I do know that this sort of insanity is wrong. There has to be some proportion between the punishment and the act. It would be like sending a six-year-old who steals a toy or candy from a store to jail for 10 years. I mean, that obviously wouldn't happen with a six-year-old, but you get my point. I'm not condoning foolish behavior or dangerous or criminal behavior. Of course, deal with it on its basis. I brought this up because I was so outraged when I saw it in the convenience store where I picked up my paper today, that brought it to the attention of, I take it she's an Arab woman behind the counter. You know, when you talk to them about anything else other than
how much is the cost of this? They go into, they don't speak very good English mode. But anyway, I got across to her that I simply wanted to make a comment on this. And she at least got the point and said, well, she shouldn't be kicked out of school for that. And she at least got the point, which is the point, that she was doing this foolish act, if that's what it was, on her own time. And it should be dealt with in that regard. She should not lose her opportunity for an education, and incidentally, for probably proper employment. There is a profound meanness afoot in our society today. Well, here's another. Newcomb. The story. Also from my new hometown of Hamilton. Downtown library washrooms closed due to disruptive behavior. The Hamilton Public Library has temporarily closed washrooms on three of the downtown branch's floors in an effort to deter what it calls disruptive behavior. Okay, you misbehave. You can't go to the bathroom. Well, what are they going to do? Go in the hall? Okay, well, actually, it's not quite that bad, but that included drinking and illicit drug use in the washrooms of the York Boulevard Library, says Director of Finance and Facilities Tony Delmonico. Quote, it's just a symptom of downtown Hamilton, he said, noting a rise in opioid use in recent years. Washrooms on the first and second floors remain open. Facilities on the first floor are larger and also include a gender-neutral washroom. Oh, well, that's not wonderful. A gender-neutral washroom. I haven't been into that library, so I don't know. A gender-neutral washroom. Gee, I don't know whether I should go to the men's or the women's. I better go to the neutral washroom. God, we're a mentally ill society, aren't we? Okay. Delmonico says the closures were prompted by a recent rise in inappropriate activity. I hate that word. What does it mean? Somebody swore? Or somebody left bubblegum on the floor? Well, apparently they were drinking and drugging. It is a bad area of town. So anyway, washrooms on the top floors will be closed, but you can still go to the washroom on the first or second floor. The hope is to break some of the patterns over the next few weeks. So we're going to modify their behavior by making it tougher to go to the washroom. But there'll be more people in the washroom at the same time. Well, frankly, is that actually good? I mean, do people? I mean, if you're as much of a rummy dub as you're going to drink in a public washroom, will it absolutely prevent you if there's somebody else? If somebody else comes into the washroom, so, well, I can't have a drink. I can't take this bottle out of my pocket. Somebody else has just come in. Frankly, I don't think it'll matter. Or if this is a problem, instead of punishing everybody, and that's the insanity of some approaches to human behavior, particularly under cultural Marxism. If something goes wrong, punish everybody. One fellow in New Zealand, who actually wasn't even a New Zealander, shoots up a mosque and kills 50 people. Well, take away all the guns. Well, the guns that will be taken away from law-abiding gun users were not the guns used in the killing. So we punish the innocent. Well, here in the library, we will inconvenience everybody. So if you're up on the third floor, you're going to have to come down a level to go to the washroom, which is okay if you're young and healthy. But the article went on, but if you're handicapped, or if you're slow moving, you're older, it's more of a hassle. So you're being punished because some people are drinking or shooting up in the washrooms. Could there be another solution? Come on, let's put on those thinking caps and scratch the old head a bit. Oh, this is a tough one. Hey, I've got an idea.
Why not? Have spot patrols by the security guards. I mean, all these libraries have security guards. If that's where the problem is, have them do the rounds. Hit the washrooms. Take a look. Maybe that would
help be a deterrent. Because unlike, say, somebody else going into the washroom, they would have the right to say, and so the other person might have to go and report the person. This person might not want to get into a hassle or confrontation. The security guards would have the perfect right to say, you can't do that, get out of the library. You know, right. So instead of punishing everybody, you try to deal with the potential offenders. That would be fair and just. Unfortunately, that's not the way many institutions think. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on likeresistanceradio.com. I'll take a musical break now. And you got a few bars of this that kind of intruded into Merle Haggard's song. That was my inadvertence. And this is Heather Miles with a great song by Leroy Van Dyke. Walk on by. Wow, it's this is the great
old on the corner. I love you, but these strangers when we meet, just walk on by. Wait on the corner. I love you, but these strangers when we meet. If I see you tomorrow on some springtown, pardon me if I don't stop to say hello. I belong to another, it wouldn't look so good to know someone I'm not supposed to know. On the corner. I love you, but strangers when we meet, just walk on by. Wait on the corner. I love you, but strangers. Goodbye again. But I know it's not over. You'll call tomorrow night. We can't stop, so why should we pretend? Just walk on by. Wait on the corner. When we meet, just walk on by. Wait on the corner. I love you, but we strangers when we meet. Oh, I love you, but we strangers when we meet.
Here's a great song. George Jones recorded it. Murder on Music Row. Like so many of us fans of old country, this speaks for us. Murder on Music Row. And this is George Strait and Alan Jackson. This is Paul Fromm.
Nobody saw him running. 16th Avenue, they never found the fingerprint or the weapon that was used. But someone killed country music, cut out its heart and soul. They got away with murder. Music Row. that murder was committed. Town music rose. Barely play, but drums and rock and roll guitars are mixed up in your face. Oh, Hank, you didn't have a chance on today's radio. Since they committed murder,
Jackson and George Strait, Murder Down on Music Row. That's a great song that says so much about what many of us believe about what's missing sometimes from country music. Here's Dottie Jack with a song Charlie McLean made famous, Sentimental Old You.
Thank you.
Bobby Jack and Sentimental Old You, a song made famous by Charlie McLean about 30 years ago. And here's another, here's a great duet, Mo Bandy and Becky Hobbs. Let's get over them together. Let's get over them together. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
I don't know if we can make it, but baby, let's give it a good try.
We're both coming off of losing, and it ain't easy telling love goodbye.
You don't look a thing like her, and I don't guess I measure up to him. Maybe together we can get each other over them. Let's get over them together and burn two old memories. Let's get over them together. I'll help you and you help me. Somewhere that's out of sight.
Before the night is over, who knows? Two losers might win and smile again.
Maybe together we can get each other over them. Let's get over them together.
That's Becky Hobbs and Mo Bandy. Let's get over them together. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I always look forward to getting your feedback on this show. If there are things you would like me to discuss, if I can, I'd be very glad to. Drop me an email at paul@paulfromm.com. That's P-A-U-L at P-A-U-L-F-R-O-M-M.com. And I would be glad to get back to you and glad to try to do it if I can. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom. freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield and never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.